We have the first ever invented machine ever, to the best of our knowledge, that can isolate the cells completely automatically, grow the cells automatically, and patch the skin automatically. So this is, again, to the best of our knowledge, the first ever proof of concept that this can be done. Yes, the machines are downstairs.
Hi, everybody. Happy New Year 2021 and welcome back to Inno Podcast. My name is Kylian Bauer, head of ESPAS Lab, Swiss Post's Innovation Lab. Before we get into our today's episode, I would like to add one point to your New Year's resolution. I bet that helping by giving feedback is one good ad, and you can do that right now. Go to our show notes, there is a link to a survey. It just takes about 2 minutes and you help us a lot to realize one of our New Year's resolution, and it is getting better with the Inno Podcast. Enjoy the new episode about building the business of skin on demand with Daniela Marino, CEO of Cutis. Welcome to the Inno Podcast. My name is Kylian Bauer, head of ESPAS Lab at Swiss Post, and I'm excited to introduce to you Daniela Marino, CEO of Cutis. Hi, Daniela. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi. Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Today, we'll discuss about your biotech company, about how to develop individual human skin, how this really works and how you actually build a business out of it. And we also look a little bit how it will change at least a part of our health system. So about you, you have a master from the University of Milan in biotech. You did your PhD at the ETH in Zurich. My trainee Till told me that it's the MIT of Switzerland. And afterwards, you worked as a postdoc at the Science Lab it's associated with the Surgery Department of the Children's Hospital in Zurich. And you mentored founders at the Swiss Startup Factory. You developed since 2015 your team and this business. You founded in 2017 officially, Cutis, and you recently won the top 100 Swiss Startup Award in 2020, biotech, and also but in 2018 and 2019. So far, an impressive way, and congratulations to this awards, and hopefully many more to come. First question, I studied your CV.
Yeah.
Biotech, working in hospitals, did your PhD. You could easily be a surgeon or doctor. Why didn't you do that?
Yes, that's a very good question. My father is probably asking the same from heaven. Actually, I wanted to be a doctor when I was a child. I wanted to be a pediatrician, so for kids, a kids doctor. Because I loved anatomy. Anatomy was the first book I ever read because I loved body parts and see the relation and all the organs and everything. So I really thought I was going to study medicine. And around the age of 7, 8, 8-ish, I changed my mind. I told my dad, I changed my mind. I don't want to be a doctor anymore because doctors are treating things which already happened. So you're sick and I need to rescue, but I want to do something which prevents people to get sick, you know. I want to do science, I want to learn things so that I can actually maybe avoid people getting sick, you know. And back then my father was very confused, of course, because he's like, okay, so what's going on? And I said, I want to play with cells, so I'm going to do science. And
by the age of 8.
At the age of 8, yes. And I abandoned my doctor idea. But you see, when I came back, I mean, it's, again, working with kids, with the children's hospital, a surgeon. So I think you always go back at one point. Everything is circular in life. So it's good to be back.
So it's pretty close, nevertheless.
Yes.
Just in a nutshell, what is Cutis is doing?
So Cutis grows skin.
Cutis or Cutis?
Cutis grows skin on demand. So people which have lost skin because of burns or because of traumas or because of other conditions and need additional skin, we can grow it for them in a personalized manner, meaning that I need a piece of the healthy skin of the patient delivered to my office, to my labs. And there we can bioengineer skin back for the patient. And so it's skin on demand.
Skin on demand sounds pretty good. Just for starters, and probably for people who are not regular dealing with topics like that, what's the usual reason people got a need for new skin?
Yes, there is about 50 million people in the world which need skin transplantation. 50 million, 50. 11 million are burns, so those are people which have usually accident at home with hot water or flames or electrical shocks or chemical burns. And then you have all those people which have other diseases like congenital nevus or a skin tumor, or they need to do a plastic surgery after a trauma, or they need to remove some sort of big scar which is bothering them. So it is people which have either had an injury or they have a disease connected to skin loss. Yeah.
50 million people worldwide, 11 yes. million because of burns.
Yes.
Is there a number probably for people in Switzerland or in Europe?
In Europe, including Switzerland, the prevalence of burns is 2.9 people every year, every 10,000 inhabitants. So it's not as high. It's actually a rare indication in Europe.
Around about 300,000 people?
Yeah.
More or less.
Yeah.
You're still in quite early phase. You have to do some clinical trials.
Yeah.
What does a hospital do when I get burned and I go to hospital and I'm like, please help me?
Yes. So today, basically, if you have a large burn and you enter the hospital, you would need to be stabilized first. I mean, they would need to make sure that you won't die, because when you lose too much skin, you are life risk, because you're losing fluid. You are open to the environment, so you can get infected and have really serious problems. Huh? How much is too much? Anything, depending on your situation. So if you're a small child or a very elderly person with concomitant other diseases, let's say usually, if it's above 30%, it's already a lot. If it's 50%, it's very serious. If it's above 50%, the chance of survival is very limited, depending on where and who treats you. So in the Western world, mortality rates are low. In developing countries, mortality rates are at 70% almost for 50% severe burn. So it depends on who treats you, because it's all a matter of controlling the infections. And so if you are in a clean environment, it's an easier situation than if you are in a non-clean environment. And then, so the skin which is on you, which is get burned, needs to be removed so that it's not the perfect substrate for bacteria to grow. And then they start patching you, which means they start taking skin from whatever else in your body you haven't burned. And the so-called skin grafts are then harvested with a cheese-like slicing machine, and then they are patching you with these grafts.
And of course, what happened to this space?
The other space, it's open again too. So and it's a new wound, right? So yeah. If you burn yourself 50%, you're completely open. You have the wounds which were the burn wounds, and the new wounds from the harvesting. And at the end of the day, you are a walking scar. So everything scars. And scars are a problem because, first of all, they look bad, but they're also very painful. They're contracting, they're itching, and they need a lot of surgeries, as corrective surgeries afterwards. And they need a lot of home care. And they are very debilitating, also psychosocially speaking. If you look at the numbers from the American Burn Association in 2018, out of 5 adult burns, 4 never went back to work. So you have also a social impact on these situations, yes. I mean, severe burns really are. I mean, you are a burn victim the moment you burn yourself, and you are a burn survivor the rest of your life. So it's not something you can forget happened. So it really is a big, big burden for those patients.
That's quite a lot. 4 or 5 people never...
4 out of 5.
4 out of 5.
Don't go back to work, yeah. They find it hard to go back to society. They find it hard to, relate with others, and it's difficult, yeah.
And probably psychologically,
yes.
Self-isolating, not
very
talking
depressing.
Anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty tough. You already mentioned there are 11 million people worldwide, about 300,000 probably in Europe. How much skin do we need, probably this year?
This year, it's a lot. I mean, let's say if you take an average adult patient, you have 1.5 square meter of skin per person, average. And if you see, if you think that the average burn size is about 20% of the surface, oh geez, you need to do the math, 20% of 1.5 square meter.
And then, for example,
then multiplied by
11 million worldwide.
Yes.
Or even more, depending.
Yeah, that's a lot of skin. I guess you could make the turn around Earth and go to the moon and come back and you will still be folding your skin grafts.
Okay.
It's a lot of skin, yeah.
So let's skip a little bit forward to the future. You mentioned briefly what Cutis is doing. And now let's imagine I'm probably somewhere in the United States, in Atlanta, Georgia. Probably, oh, wow. Because I was daydreaming.
Pretty specific.
Yeah, it was probably I was a little bit daydreaming and nervous about this whole situation we just have there. And I got in an accident and I got burnt. And now I get a hospital. And there is this possibility that I could get skin from you. So how will it work?
So you go to the hospital, the surgeon will recommend you to use this product. So he would actually prescribe you the product if you're a burn patient, because in this situation it's not really you deciding what, but he's the one telling you what you need and prescribing you something. So actually he's the one which orders the skin, but not you as a primary patient. And then he would basically ask you to sit down for 3 minutes and bend your neck so that he can take a small biopsy from behind your ear, and you will be painless, so you don't have to, you won't bleed, so don't worry. And he's gonna put this biopsy into a box, which is my box, which is standing there in a refrigerated room of the hospital. And then he will call a courier, and this courier will give me this box with the biopsy in. And I will start producing the skin for you, meaning getting your cells out, growing your cells, and combining them with a matrix, and pack that into a larger box, which contains all these little grafts ready to be used. And I ship it back to the surgeon, and the surgeon will then transplant it on you. So you, as a patient, don't have much to do but bending your neck for three minutes. Yeah.
If we go a little bit deeper, so you get a small piece of my skin,
yeah,
in order to produce more out of,
yes,
it. Probably for non-biologists, how does it work?
Yes, so cells multiply themselves. So if I take a small
even if I take them out.
Yes, I mean, I have you from the skin piece that I take from you. I have two kinds of stem cells. The stem cells are those which multiply and replicate themselves. And I have stem cells from the epithelium, which is the top layer, the epidermis, which is the outermost part of the skin. And you have cells which are in the dermis, which is the inner layer. So these two cells are the ones I need. So I will extract them and tell them to multiply in culture. So they will keep on growing. And by having more cells at the end of the days, I can repatch them into something which looks like skin and deliver you more. So if from the piece I get from you, you had 10 stem cells in that piece, I can take those 10, make them a billion, and deliver you back half of your body, because I just simply have many more cells than what I started with. So it's just about growing the stem cells and repatching them into a graft, which is then transplanted to you.
That sounds pretty easy, but I'm pretty sure it's not. I did a little bit part of my research, and we talked before, and there's about 15, 20 years of research behind that. So a lot of people spend a lot of time to make that somehow happen. What obstacles?
Why?
Yeah, of course. Why did it take so much time? But on the other hand, what were the major obstacles to overcome?
Yes, no, that's an excellent question, actually, because we are definitely not the only ones that can isolate cells and grow cells. I mean, there is a million people in the planet that do that, if not more. In skin, the concept is very simple. So we are manufacturing a product which has as a mode of action a permanent take. which means that this product, which I patch on you after I've produced it, needs to stay with you until you survive. So if you're a small child and I provide you with skin, you will grow into an adult. The skin needs to grow with you and it needs to stay with you. It cannot fall off after 5 years because it ran out of stem cells. So the problem is that you need to extract the right cells, keep them in the right status, and without any manipulation. So no manipulation on the cells, just growth. And then you need to have them in the right number in a short time, and you need to have the right culturing conditions so that once you bring them on the right matrix, which you also need to have as right matrix, not just any matrix, and you can keep on culturing them, they once transplanted will behave like skin. So it's extracting the cells, growing them correctly in a short time, and keeping them into their right environment, and once they are back on you, they know exactly what to do, you know? So it's a full process from you that goes back to you, and the cells are in the right setting with the right instructions on what to do. So it's all a matter of culturing conditions, timing, what ingredients, what matrix, what conditions, 2D culture, 3D cultures. That's the trick. That's what takes you time to build. The concept of isolation and growth, that's nothing which we invented. But the whole process, it's pretty tricky. And we want to be quick and good and cheap, which makes it very, very difficult to achieve. So that's the challenge.
You just described this process of how probably this small piece of me grows into something bigger. Actually, in the current situation, how much of this whole process is needed to be by humans? Because I'm wondering if you have 11 million people and that's growing so much skin, you cannot have people working to create new skin. So you have to be somehow to automate this whole process.
Yes, I mean, you could take this somehow away. I mean, basically, the first moment we built the company, we invested on automation because we are not a company which bioengineers corneas. You know, every patient has two little patches and that's it. We have to provide square meters of skin, and we also need to be very flexible in how much and when, because not everybody will need the same and not at the same time. So the process has to be extremely robust, but also extremely flexible and extremely efficient. And you cannot achieve all that with people, with regular operators. I mean, it would take too long. It would be very difficult to train everybody to do exactly the same anywhere on the planet. And it's a matter of space. I mean, we need to be able to grow billions of cells and to create skin, which takes physical space, you know, for many people, for many patients. So you will need 5 floors of facility with 200 employees day and night just culturing cells. And that's not scalable, and it's not going to be affordable, and it's not going to be sustainable. So luckily for us, it is 2020 and not the 90s, when actually in the US, Professor Boyce tried to do exactly what we are doing now, but it was just not the right time. There was no technology supporting his work. And you can't scale it the way it's always been done manually. So we started working on machines from day zero at Cutis. And now after 2 years, thanks to also support from InnoSwiss and the European Commission, we have the first in-line production, still as a prototype and a proof of concept. I mean, don't take me wrong, we are not ready to now manufacture automatically, but we have the first ever invented machine ever, to the best of our knowledge, that can isolate the cells completely automatically, grow the cells automatically, and patch the skin automatically. So this is, again, to the best of our knowledge, the first ever proof of concept that this can be done. Yes, the machines are downstairs.
That's awesome. I didn't know that.
Yes. So, I mean, it's the only way we will be able to scale up. Otherwise, we will remain a small company that can treat a couple of patients a month and nothing more.
How much skin can this prototype currently produce?
So right now it's a prototype. So right now we can do 400 square centimeters of skin, which is, something like that. But it's just the first prototype. A proof of concept. I mean, there is nothing like that. So we now need money to...
In how much time?
We need 20 days, 22 days. Yeah,
22 days for 400 square centimeter.
Yes. I mean, the last machine, which is the one making the skin, was now built for 4 patches, you know, which in each of them is 100. But that's because it's a prototype. I'm not going to do a prototype which can do 100 grafts, you know. So it's not a limitation of the technology. It's just a prototype, and you do that in a small scale to start, you know. So
if we probably go one step further, so let's say this prototype, you improve it day by day,
sure,
and someday it's probably also decentralized, so in every country there is probably several of them,
maybe every continent, not every country.
Okay, so let's say every continent has one facility with this machine, and it delivers enough skin for people who are in need of it. So this pretty skin gets back to the hospital, and then a surgeon will, put it on my skin.
Mm-hmm. On your wounds, not on your skin.
On your wound, sorry, on my wound, exactly, yes. I was wondering, does it really need a surgeon for this, some kind of easy step?
It's not easy at all.
It needs
the physical transplantation to take it out from the box and put it on you and staple it, because they are stapling it. That's something maybe anybody could do. I mean, with a bit of, firm hands and a bit of techniques. The thing is that you need to make sure that the skin is transplanted on the right wounds. If the wounds are infected, or the wounds don't have enough blood supply, or the wounds have some strange appearance, which may say that this was infected maybe back in a few days back, and now it's just recovering. If it's bleeding too much, if you see it's necrotic, so the tissue is already dying. You know, you need to make sure that you transplant skin, not just my product. You transplant skin on a wound which is happy to receive the graft. Otherwise, the graft will just be rejected because there is no blood supply, or there is a big hematoma under, or there is some dead tissue, and then it will fall off. So if you are not a good surgeon, you would just patch it everywhere, and then maybe only half of it will survive, the other half will just drop, you know? So you need to prepare the wound bed. The wound bed preparation, that's how it's called, the wound bed, needs to be done in a very, very professional way. So that when you apply the skin takes and it grows, you know. Otherwise, it's not just because of the novel skin. When you do now skin transplantation from right to left, you need to make sure that the wound is ready. Otherwise, also the original technique, the standard of care, will not take.
Okay, so prepare the wound.
It's preparing
for
the wound bed and knowing exactly when the wound bed is ready, because after a burn, the wounds keep on growing granulation tissue. You know, all the cells continue producing, and you need to know if it's too much, if it's too little, if you gotta wait. You need to have the eye, you know, to know when is the right time. So that's the tricky part. The physical transplantation is not a big deal.
Got it. So what I got so far is that we have about 11 million people in the world, probably 300,000 in Europe. You have already, well, already sounds very nice, although I think it's a really major achievement. You have a prototype which can produce about 400 square centimeter of skin in about 20 days. Mm-hmm. And from the very beginning, you designed the whole thing, the whole process to be made automatically, so that there is no need basically for when you get the piece of skin from patient, and it will be delivered to Curtis, and to get back the result, there is no human interaction necessary.
There is some human interaction necessary between different machines, but the process is closed, which means nobody ever sees the human material. So the surgeon puts the skin in a tube, and nobody's touching it any longer. So there is no interaction of humans with the tissue, with the cells, with the biopsy. But in between the machines, there might be some movement, some moving of bags, some connection to do, some. But there is no operator touching the tissue. So just to give you the very, very classical example, if the patient which is waiting for the skin is COVID positive, my operators are totally safe. There is no whatsoever interaction of the material with the operator. So the patient will receive is most likely COVID positive skin, but my operators are safe. So that's what it is. Closed, not fully automated necessarily, but fully closed.
But on long term, you would like to have it, if possible,
fully automated. Yeah, I mean, we looked at that concept very initially. We thought it would be one machine per patient, you know, that runs the whole process. But we did some evaluation and some strategic planning, and we realized that it's not maybe very smart to do it like that for the moment, because the step of isolation is very short. It's a few hours. The step of amplification can vary because depending on how much skin it's needed, it can be short or long. And the patient knows only at the very end how much skin needs, right? So it tells you, I want all the 20. By the time you're ready, you may need more, may need less. Huh? So we also need to be flexible in hooking those modules together rather than having one machine blocked for the whole process for one patient. So that's why we switched from this one big box per patient into three modules, which one can hook depending on the situation. So if the patient needs 100 grafts and my machine can do 50 at the time, I will hook two of them. If it needs 300, I will hook five of them. You know, it's depending on, it's really to try and push for personalization and flexibility in the manufacturing. If the patient only needs three grafts, I'm not going to block the full machine, which can do 100, you know. I'm going to use the module, which can do 10 or 5, you know. So that's why we haven't pursued the big box idea. But it's something which, of course, will be much, much more, you know, nicer to look at and to work with in the future. But today we go with modules. That's smarter, I think.
Probably to have one look at the technology you're using. We mentioned there's 15-20 years of research, and new technologies came up, and you mentioned this one professor from the United States, who tried to build something in the 90s. So what do you have today, which wasn't there 30 years ago?
Yeah. Already 30 years ago.
Is
gosh,
it?
The 90s.
Oh, yeah. It's
yeah, shit. That makes me pretty old.
Yes, I'm sorry.
It's pretty sad.
I'm sorry.
Yes, it is 30 years ago. Yeah, I mean, there is definitely more biology knowledge. So we know more about stem cells. We know more about tissue regeneration. There is more biomaterials one can use to create the skin. And there is more technology. We can ship things nowadays in specialized biocouriers. We have bioreactors. We have many new materials, like more, you know, we know more how to grow the cells in terms of nutrients, what they need, what they don't need. And back then, it was just the beginning in a way. I think actually the first culture of cells was kind of released to the world in the late 70s. So it's not very old, you know. I mean, we knew about chemistry a century ago, but when it comes to biology, we are a bit late, and we just catched up now. I mean, it was just too early, you know. So he knew what to do, but he had no idea how to really scale it up, you know. So he treated actually 100 patients, more or less, in US over 10 years or so. But nothing came out to the market, so it's a pity. But so we learned a lot from him, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, so it's the amount of knowledge you have or we have after 30 years, or is there something else which helped to make this breakthrough?
It's biological knowledge for sure, which advanced in the last 30 years. I mean, 30 years ago, I think even the word stem cell was kind of new. I mean, the knowledge about stem cells has become much more advanced now. I mean, it's going very fast. And the technology as well. I mean, you know, I mean, now we have bioreactors to grow things. We can do 3D printing. We have bioinks. We have many more things which you can use to create tissues than they were not there 30 years ago. I mean, bioprinters, 30 years ago. There was not even the term, I think, you know. A bioink, what's a bioink? I mean, you will think about a tinterfish, you know, like an octopus. That would be your bioink. I know. So it's really the way technology evolved in combination with biology, because technology 30 years ago was evolving anyways in many other directions too. I mean, the phones, you know, in the 90s, did I have a handy? I think I had a handy when I was, yeah. 93, 94, I think I got my first handy. So it's like, you know, everything evolved. So, and you need technology. I don't think there is any ways you can decouple biology from technology. It doesn't work. So you need to fuse the two together. And now it's probably the right alignment of planets, you know, as our chief innovation officer says. Now everything is aligned. Back then, it was struggled, you know. I mean, imagine how much was a computer costing 30 years ago. You know, if you want to build a company and build a lab, and this would have been impossible, a bit very difficult. Yeah. So we are at the right time, hopefully.
Okay. You already mentioned your chief innovation officer.
Yes.
Let's have a look on your company. Currently, how many people are working for Curtis?
We are now almost 30.
30 people?
Almost, yeah.
Doing, I guess, more or less research and building up this prototype and making the development of this.
Yeah, so we have operation team, financial, R&D, clinical, and back office. Yeah, so it's...
Well, what's your current revenue?
Zero.
Okay.
We are not selling anything.
You're not?
No.
But you mentioned that you do these clinical research.
Yeah.
Do you get any money for that?
No, we pay to do clinical research. No,
why
it's
not?
A sad life.
Why not?
We pay them.
Okay.
So that they can do the clinical research for us.
Okay.
It's a different story.
If it's possible to say, how much does the treatment cost today?
So in Switzerland, if you have a 50% burn case, over 5 years, it costs you about 2 million Swiss francs.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, in standard of care, not with my product. Eh?
Yeah.
With my product, we will try to decrease at least a 30% in total.
Which we still pretty much...
Yeah, you're still a 50% severe burn. I mean, you're going to be expensive to the system. You have to be doing a lot of surgeries, a lot of maintenance, physiotherapy, a lot of things. 50% burn is a challenge. It's not an easy patient to treat.
How much will it cost when you create skin for, let's say, 1 million people one day?
How much will it cost to sell it? Yeah, look, I mean, that's a question which is still in the clouds. I mean, we are looking now at US and Europe. We are doing a payer search. So we are trying to taste the water, you know, what would be the price which would be reimbursed and accepted by the market. And there is no comparable product right now sold in Europe. There is something similar in the US, I mean, with a different mode of action, different process, but still in skin, and we will try not to be disruptive against their price. I mean, we don't want to come to the market with something which is three times more expensive than what's already available, but the pricing will be very much depending on where you will sell the product. I mean, we see already now the US price is much higher than what Europe would accept, you know, and if you want to go to India, you want to go to Korea, I mean, you would need to level up the price. So it's going to end up...
Can you give us a number?
I mean, it's definitely in triple digit. I mean, if you want to cover 20% of a body surface, you need $100,000 to $200,000 to do that.
And the basic hypothesis is that if you do have a treatment like that, you won't have way more expensive treatments in terms of more surgeries, psychological costs, people not working anymore, the social cost.
Correct. So that's a deal. The deal is that you pay more to start, to buy the product, but then you will save, that's what we say, at least 30% of the total cost, because you will have less surgeries, less physiotherapy, less rehabilitation, and less socioeconomic impact by missing school or missing because if you miss school, then parents cannot go to work. You know, it's all connected. So that's the concept, yeah.
Is there a chance you could share the number of your company's evaluation, current? But you mentioned already you have yes,
crazy.
You have already investors.
Yeah, we have raised more than 40 million so far.
40 million francs.
Yeah, since the beginning.
And you found it in 2006.
17. March 17.
Okay, so in 3 years, 40 million. Who are your investors?
Different family offices, European family offices, a Taiwanese family office, private individuals, the Novartis Venture Fund, the Wyss Foundation, the Giuliani Pharma in Italy, the Zeccabe, a mixture of things.
If I'm allowed to ask, how much do you own?
Me?
Yeah.
I cannot tell you, but I'm the largest shareholder.
Still? That's.
I don't know for how long, but so far, so good.
Okay. How did you find them? So how did you find
these? How did I find investors?
The investors, yeah. And what did you...
That's like...
What did you pitch in order to get so much money?
Well, I mean, there is a very good ecosystem in Switzerland. So there is a lot of organizations like Venture Lab, like the, you know, the bioentrepreneurship programs, also in Tessin, in Lugano, and here in Zurich. There is the, you know, the many competitions one can do so you can get visibility and people, you know, investors go attend those competitions to see which are the best startups. And so you need to be very much on the ground. You need to be present in those events and the networking aperos and the networking lunches and the networking dinners. And because you need to make yourself visible. I mean, investors invest in people. You know, they invest in the business because they need to get some money out of it and they like it, but they invest in people. So you need to be there. You need to, you know, win their trust. Huh? And it takes time to talk to them, to meet them, to keep the relation even when you don't need the money. You find the best investors when you are not looking for money. Because when you're looking for money, you are stressed. And they can feel that you are stressed and you would say anything just to get their money. But if you talk to them and you become friend in brackets with them when you don't need the money, they feel less pressure and they open up better. And then when you need the money, they know you're ready. So everything is easier, you know. So it's all a matter of relation. You need to cultivate the relation just like you would do with a friend or with a neighbor. You need, they're actually regular human beings. So... which made their fortune because they did a good job in their past and now they want to be of help to others and they cannot just help everybody. So you need to sell them a dream, you know, saying that you are the right person they should invest in and that you that they actually like your vision and dream. But you meet them in so many different occasions. I mean, I met them at even giving a talk at UBS Female Circle, you know, then there was an investor which knew another investor. And so I always like to go to those events because you never know who could be listening and who knows somebody that was listening. And that's why it helps a lot to be a bit of a South Italian spirit. You know, I'm just talk to anybody. I like to ask the first question. I like to be there and say, sure, I mean, ask me, you know, you can call me anytime. And you need to be at their disposal, which is part of the job. I mean, if you are the CEO, you need to have this attitude. Otherwise, you won't raise money. And you need to be very persistent, you know. So if you think somebody really liked you but didn't invest that time, you know, it's not like, oh, he did not invest, so it's done with me. You know, I'm not going to talk to him anymore. That's not working, you know. Even if he didn't invest, maybe you can still have a call, you can still have a coffee, you can see you, maybe you can ask him a suggestion, or maybe you can ask him for a tip, and he will feel engaged even though he did not invest, you know. And maybe one day he will when it's the right time. So it's a lot of relation. It's a very, very interesting social exercise. But you find them anywhere, your LinkedIn, on at the bar, at the networking event, at the competition. Different places, but you need to look for them. I mean, it's not like they fall out of the sky. Huh? It's work.
That's an interesting part to say that even if they decline an investment and they probably will not invest for whatever reasons, that's still worth in investing in this relationship.
Absolutely.
Are you looking for more investors?
Well, right now, I mean, as we are recording, yes, we are closing around on the 4th of December. But if this goes out in January, then the answer is no, right now not.
Okay. How much money are you looking for?
So we would like to raise another 8 million before December 4.
8 million? That's compared to the 14 million before, it's quite small.
Yeah, but it's 2 weeks to go, so it's not a lot.
Okay.
We'll see. Keep hopes high.
I have no doubt that you will get
Well, it's tough times. Eh? Don't forget the pandemic, the disasters, and everybody's afraid. And it's an extension. So we closed the round in June. We raised 20 million in June. So it's not that I need money, but... I wanted to raise 30 before the pandemic, so I think I give it a try, you know, to go back to the original number. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, we are covered. I mean, it's not like I need to close this round necessarily, but it would be nice because it's, you know, additional 10 would give really a nice push. So
do you have a specific time where you say, okay, from that year on, we will probably have a validated prototype which will be able to, really scale up and really to start sell our product or service?
Yeah, I mean, depending on the cash we will cash in, we say 2024, we should have the machines in production.
Still a way to go, so.
Still a way to go, yeah. I mean, it's not just a matter of making the machine. You need to validate it, get it certified, get it approved. I mean, we are talking about creating skin for people. I'm not making coffee, you know? So it's a long process.
Besides funding, what kind of support do you expect from your investors?
Well, definitely trust and understanding, because things may go different than what I told them initially they would be. So I hope that my investors will always be supporting us no matter what happens, if they realize we did the best we could. So I need people which have a open mind and they're really, really committed to help us in good and bad. It's almost like a marriage, you know, when you have a new investor. And the fact that most of them, especially now after this round, really are knowledgeable in different fields. So, I mean, I know it sounds arrogant if I say I expect, but I wish I could take the phone and call them if I need something and use their knowledge to solve issues or to take decisions. So not all of them are active. I mean, of course, we have many investors and not all of them, you know, follow the company day by day. But there is a few which are really, really committed to support and which I can use almost as advisors, you know, for many different things. So that's good.
Okay, so in terms of business decisions or in terms of more the scientific part?
Yeah, depending. Above. I mean, there is people which are, you know, they build their companies in regulatory, some others which do a little production, some other which do financial, some other which do IT, some other which do, you know, they are medical doctors, so we can still ask them for some, you know, it's they have different backgrounds. And depending on the question I have, I can pick the phone and call.
So what I understood so far, so we have, you have founded in 2017, mm-hmm. raised 40 million francs so far. You're currently raising 8 million more. But when we publish this
it's
already
done.
Over.
Yeah.
So if I calculate a bit, I would say we are evaluation you did not tell me, but
I would
guess we're talking about, depending on the race, it's about, it depends, 300 to 500 million, more or less.
That's way too high. We are not the triple digit yet. We're still double digit.
Double, really? When you raise almost 50 million,
yeah.
Well, 50 million francs. Uh-huh.
Welcome to Europe. If you go to the US, you're right. Not in Europe.
Okay, that's really surprising.
Mm-hmm. No, it's good, because otherwise it would be very difficult to raise money.
Well, yeah, okay. Yeah,
at this stage. If the valuation is what you said, there would no chance I would raise any single euro anymore. It's way too high. Okay. Europe is not ready for that. In the US, I agree. Maybe I would be at 200 right now, but it's not. Here it's not. And I'm fine. I mean, who cares about the valuation right now?
you said it's around about 2024 when it will be...
With the machines.
With the machines?
Yeah, with our machines, we hope 2023 to be commercial. We hope.
So, and since we talk about, human skin, it takes quite some time, what you said, compared to coffee, it's way more, different. And what I also understood is that, and when you're looking for investors, don't be insulted if you get a no. Keep the relationship, invest in the relationship, go to those events, to these competitions, and especially in your case, when you win the Startup Award in 3 years in a row, I guess?
Well, this year we're top one. Last year we were top six. The year before we were top five. So we officially won it as top one this year, but we have been top one biotech for 3 years in a row. Yeah.
Exactly. So, but even probably this is something which helps
to find
investors and to get in touch with them. So this is what I took. If we go probably even one step further, there's this one startup which are on the other side called Virtamate. What they do is I had with the co-CEO. I published an episode a couple of weeks ago. What they did is they created flight simulations for surgeons. So what they started with, a simulator for knee surgeries and expanded then to other parts of the body. So for arms and
so they can
legs.
train
surgeons. Exactly. You can produce individual human skin, skin on demand. And can you probably imagine to expand as well, probably to make other parts of the body like, and I have to read that, like new cruciate ligaments? I don't know if I got it right, or a lung, or a liver, or brain cell, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, that's the future, I think. Anyways, I think in the next 10 years we will see an explosion of this engineering body parts. Honestly, it's really the future. With our knowledge, definitely, we could expand the tissue selection, let's say, for the demand part. We are trying to do that with the machines. So when we build the machines now, we develop the machines, we thought about that concept. So to build machines which could be so flexible and so adaptable that we could also isolate cells from something else than skin. For example, so the machine we have developed together with Zülke, which isolates human skin cells from skin, could, in practice, isolate cells from fat, cells from a piece of liver, cells from a tumor, because it's a tissue which needs to be digested and cells need to be filtered out and washed and processed. So, yes, we actually hope to have started the development of a platform. So those machines could one day produce other tissues as well. Mainly soft tissues, because we are a soft tissue company, so we are not doing bone, but your ligament idea, it's something which could fit cartilage, mucosa, muscle. I mean, you know, whatever it's needed, theoretically it's doable with extra work. I mean, it's not, you know, you will need to work on the machines, but it's the concept, you know, the fully closed automated concept, which could be extended, yeah, to other tissues for sure. I mean, that would be cool.
I hope so. That would be really cool. I watched this one video where someone had a surgery, took an RFID chip and implemented into his hand. So he had the basic idea of, if I walk around in my company and I need a badge or something like that to get into the building, I forgot it regularly, and that somehow it's annoying. So I took out the RFID chip of my badge and put it into my skin. So I can feel him, to be honest, because sometimes I forgot my badge somewhere and I'm like, okay, where the heck is it? So I would be lying if I would say I didn't think about it to do it as well. nevertheless, is there a chance? Do you see any, probably not an FRID chip, but do you see any technological things you could put in human skin as well?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a very cool thing. And that's, I think, where it's going to go. So I always take the example of the eye, you know. Right now, if you lose an eye because of a tumor or other things, I mean, you can have an eye replacement, which is basically just aesthetics. I mean, it doesn't have any function, right? So one day one could think about engineering the eye with the cells or the tissue and then having a robotic, you know, insertion in there. For example, a microchip which would mimic the retina or do the work of the retina, you know, or implement a chip that can replace the optical nerve. So I think it's going to be a fusion. It's going to be a fusion of bio tissues with technology that will make it work. Because the idea of rebuilding an eye as an organ with all the different features, think that's really far away from as of today. But the world goes so fast. I mean, nobody knows, right? And the same is for skin. I mean, skin is a thin organ, but it's still an organ. It's full of hair, sweat glands, sebaceous glands, nerves, blood vessels. And as of today, we can't reproduce the organ. That's why we do tissue engineering. We don't do organ engineering. We don't do that. So one day, maybe there is a way to introduce technology in the skin with a chip or something which can, regenerate, but replicate the work that the sweat glands does, you know, by producing sweat under the skin. I mean, why not? So right now it sounds almost like science fiction, but I think honestly it's the future. I mean, and I think the eye is a perfect example. It's so complex. And there is, I think, much more advances in technology than in biology to replicate what the retina does, for example, which is impressive function. So so the chip under the skin, yes, why not? But I think there is more to come.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. Before we get to the end, I mentioned the example of me being in Georgia.
Yes.
And getting new skin. And when I got my research right, you currently have the clinical trials in Europe. Yes. So it's here and in the Netherlands.
Yes, and soon in Italy as well, if the COVID allows us.
How do you, because of course, as Swiss Post, from a logistics standpoint, how do you bring the skin, the new skin you created to the patient, and how do you get the small piece from the patient to you?
Yeah.
Currently.
Yeah. So currently we are using couriers, so really dedicated couriers, which can take the biopsy from the hospital and bring it to us within 24 hours. And then we have a courier which comes and pick up the box with the skin inside and ships it to the, and brings it to the site within 48 hours. So right now the numbers are relatively limited. I mean, we have 3 centers in the Netherlands and soon 3 in Italy and 2 in Switzerland. So we can still afford dedicated couriers, you know, door to door. But of course, once we are on the market, we need to have an agile system to ship those boxes without a dedicated courier holding the box. And that's why we have to work on the logistics. I mean, that's extremely crucial. We need to have a very agile system to be on time, because if the skin arrives late, we have a problem. If the skin arrives too early, it's a problem. So we need to have something which is very controlled, traceable, and affordable, because right now the dedicated courier is extremely expensive. So we need to find a way to fit our product into the logistic chain of the bioproducts. We are not the only one shipping bioproducts, but we need to have a way to fit into that chain so that we can cut the costs and be sure to deliver at the right time to the surgeons. You know, there will always be problems at the customs. You know, we need to make sure that we have the right. And we are also now working on being able to ship by plane, because so far we are only shipping by land. So we are working on the validation of that. And so we can then serve maybe all Europe from Zurich. But as soon as we want to go to Georgia, where you did the example, we would then have a hub per manufacturer in the US. So that's why at the beginning I said maybe one hub per continent. The idea would be that we can still have four or five days of shelf life. And if you are somewhere in one continent, within 4 or 5 days by plane, you can reach the rest of the continent. So maybe Asia would be a bit too complicated to have just one, maybe a couple of, but that's the idea. So having those regional hubs. And then you need a chain, a logistic chain, of course. Yeah, which is something which we don't have yet. Huh? We have to build. So
for example, just to give an idea, I will ask my logistic colleagues about that. For example, if Swiss Post would like to partner up with you,
yeah,
and say, hey, we'll do the logistic,
the
part
shipping,
of it.
Yeah.
What is absolutely crucial that it needs to work?
We need a system where to ship the skin. So there is no box today that can contain our skin. So right now we have developed a box together with a company called SkyCell. And now we need to have bigger boxes because we are making more skin. And we need to be having...
Has to be there a specific temperature?
Temperature, exactly.
Which would be...
So right now we are doing that at 37 degrees, so like body temperature. But we are working on room temperature now. So we are really working, because if you do room temperature, it's going to be cheaper. So room temperature would be a game changer, yes. So, but you need to control it, monitor it. So it's not that, you know, you need to be sure that the skin is not going into, you know, big shifts of temperature. So you still need a controlled box in a way, even if it's room temperature. And then you will need traceability, recording. You know, we need to, when the skin arrives, they need to be sure that the skin has always been in the right temperature with the right humidity and everything. And traceability, where is it? Did it get lost? Or how long was it stuck at the custom and stuff like that? So, but it's more or less what people do for organ transplantation. When you ship a liver or a heart for transplantation, that's a, it's a biologistic. I mean, you need to trace and control things. You cannot have a heart, you know, and not at 4 degrees for too long, otherwise you would not be able to transplant it, right? So it's nothing really we need to reinvent, but we need to, again, go into the chain in one way, yeah.
So let's take three questions for the end. Yeah. Fortunately, we did not spend too much talking about the pandemic, which is pretty good.
Yes.
What are you looking forward to when this whole thing ends?
Well, I'm looking forward to travel again. I want to go to the beach.
Okay, that's good.
Yes.
probably as a biotech startup, what is your expectation from a large company, for example, Swiss Post?
What is the expectation? Yeah, I mean, really support. I mean, if one day I would be a big company, I would do all I can to support the small companies to reach the state. I mean, that we are now. I mean, I think it's really important to, you know, sharing is caring. If you are bigger because you got bigger and you have now more to give, you should give it back to, you know, to those which you trust and think have a potential, of course. But we would like really to have agile ways to collaborate, you know, not too much bureaucratic, not too much complicated, because sometimes to do a partnership with a big company takes you years, and then by the time you have done with the deal, the company's gone, you know. So something which is agile and startup friendly and supportive, you know, because I cannot just use the cash from the investors to do a new project. So if a company like Swiss Post says, look, I like this project, I will co-finance it, you know, I would come and provide you that and that and that, then I have the right incentive to start. Otherwise, I'm always going to be in defensive because I have enough money to do what I have to do and nothing else, you know. So support, trust, and innovation. I mean, those big companies need to foster innovation, and innovation comes from the small companies. So that's what would be cool, not just from Swiss Post, but from the whole world.
Well, at least we try to do our part.
Yes, absolutely.
At the Espasab entrance, we reserved some space for you. Which quote may I write there for you?
I'll actually have a T-shirt which says, "Carpe the hell out of this DM." So, and since I like Latin, maybe you can quote that.
Carpe
the hell out of this DM.
Daniela Marino, thanks a lot.
I like that. Thank you for having me.